Hey everyone, welcome to episode 24 of the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm your host, James Darley. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday. All show notes can be found at www.historicperformance.net/podcast. My Twitter account is at Historic Perform. There I publish all the latest podcasts, and it's the best way to keep up to date with the show. Today's episode is going to be a little bit of a digression. As I mentioned in my recent blog post, My Vision for Historic Performance in 2016, my focal point is always going to be soccer. It's a sport that I work in and a sport that I'm extremely passionate about. Having said that, I think we can learn from experts that aren't just involved in soccer. So I'm going to be bringing strength and conditioning, sports scientists, and technical coaches from different areas with a different area of expertise. So today I'm actually going to be highlighting the sport of fencing, which I find very fascinating, and I'm bringing one of the best college fencing coaches in the United States on the podcast. His name is Michael Altschwertig, and he is the head men and women's fencing coach at Columbia University, and he's also the fencing chairman at the New York Athletic Club. As you will learn, New York City is the hotbed for fencing. About 50% of the U.S. Olympic fencing team trains in New York. Specific topics that we're going to be covering on the podcast is Michael's unique approach to college recruitment. College fencing matches are 5 points rather than your standard 15 points. So his quote-unquote money blade approach looks at statistics and data that he collects of high school fencers and makes sure that they're going to be good college fencers. Beyond that, we discuss the importance of strength and conditioning for fencing. And lastly, we talk about how Michael ended up actually becoming involved in fencing. It's a pretty fascinating story. I think you're going to enjoy it. Let's get it started. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Today I'm extremely excited to have Michael Altschwertig. I've been waiting for a really long time to get someone who's involved with fencing on the podcast. It's a sport that I enjoy watching. I think it's not really discussed that much here in the United States. And so I'm really happy to have him on, especially since I'm a New Yorker and he's the head coach for the Columbia University program. So Michael, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. So, Michael, just to start us off, can you give us a little background and how you got to your current role?
Sure. So, I'm actually a Brooklyn native, but I grew up in a place called Shreveport, Louisiana, and that's where I got introduced to the sport of fencing. The way it actually happened was I was a big cross-country runner, and 2 days before entering a new high school, in order to take a French class, my mom got a call and said, "Your son has a choice of taking either gymnastics or fencing." And I didn't know which sport was going to be cooler, but I figured, you know, get to hit people with swords for the fencing. And so I just jumped to it. And by my sophomore year in high school, I went to Junior Olympics, which had 1,000 other kids, which was a lot more than I saw in Shreveport, Louisiana. And then I was sold. I was sold on it. And after high school, I moved to New York. And New York is a hotbed of fencing. We actually have more than half of the Olympic team for the last couple quadrennials based here in New York at New York's clubs. And I fenced for New York University. And I really had two dreams, which was making it on Wall Street and making the Olympics in fencing. And I went to Stern School of Business. But after that, I was, you know, I was a good fencer, never made the Olympics, but always kept the passion. And, you know, here we are 25 years later after I graduated from college, and now I'm in my dream job, coaching Columbia University.
I remember that you sent me an article just to give me a little brief overview of the program itself. And one of the things that you've been known for, and you've talked about this in your TEDx talks, and it's also been in the Columbia newspaper, is your statistical approach to fencing. Mm-hmm. So can we just start off with a brief overview of what that entails?
Sure. It's actually kind of funny. You know, some people actually, you know, there was a movie out there on baseball called Moneyball, you know, about the Oakland A's. And so some people are they're joking around saying that's Money Blade, you know, to fencing. And I kind of derived it from growing up in Louisiana. I was actually handicapping horses. There's the Louisiana Downs down there. And I had a way of kind of looking at past performances and looking at, you know, whether the horse was on turf or dirt, different areas, different things. And I kind of took that and looked over past performances at fencing. And the big difference is with fencing, the amount of points that someone needs to win a match. So in a national competition or Olympic competition, they need 15 points. And in college, it's only 5. And so it's really looking back at a lot of past performances and who you might feel would be someone that would adapt to the college fencing a little bit better. And, you know, it's been working a lot. So everyone jokes around that I have my money ball recruits.
When you're actually looking at different qualities of high school fencers and trying to bring them to Columbia University, what are specific qualities that you're looking for? And I know you can't go into minute detail, but just a general overview.
Sure. You know, I'd say it's very important, and it probably spreads throughout all sports, is you really got to love the sport that you're playing, you know, especially when you get into college. Because once you get into college, you know, in a place like Columbia or many other universities, there's a lot of great distractions out there. You know, those great distractions might be other clubs. In the case of, Columbia, there's New York City. You know, you can do something every night, right? And so if you really love your sport and you really want to become better at that sport, it helps you once you're in college. And then, you know, a lot of people say this, but it's really true when people say that, you know, we're really looking for people that, you know, strive to become better athletes, that people that, you know, have that work ethic, that have that desire to be better. And better doesn't necessarily mean, in fencing, you know, to win every competition, but to just better their game. And if they do that, they'll end up helping the team to win championships. So, you know, everything from their love of the sport to the desire to become better at the sport, to be committed to the sport, those are definitely, you know, qualities that, you know, we're looking for, as well as I'm sure many other coaches are looking for.
Michael, I really couldn't agree with you more. Coming from a strength and conditioning background where I've had the privilege and the honor of working with Division I athletes, I couldn't agree more that mindset is absolutely critical. Is the mindset there? Is this person have the drive to be a Division I athlete? Because a lot of people have this fantasy of what it means to be a D1 athlete. They want to have that title, but they don't want to put the hard work that is actually necessary to be one.
Exactly. And you also hit something really great. It's, you know, it's the work ethic and the drive to put in what it takes to be a champion. But the mindset is extremely important as well. And, you know, that's something where you don't want someone cocky or overconfident, but someone that can believe that they can be a champion. You know, that's the first step. You have to believe in order to have that huge achievement.
One of the things that were also mentioned was now you receive about 25 or more emails per week from high school fencers, basically pitching why they'd be good for your program. And many of them have actually started to send you spreadsheets of statistics. Mm-hmm. So when they're sending this, what are things that they're trying to highlight in order to try to get into Columbia fencing program?
Sure. I mean, what's great is, you know, people have seen that TEDx talk that I gave, and they have been reading articles, and, you know, anyone trying to get into any Ivy League school, I'm sure, is smart and they can read between the lines. And so without even asking, they're coming up with their own type of recruiting ways of, letting them be seen by the coaches. I know in some sports they show videos, as they do at fencing, but now they're sending, you know, all their match scores. They're sending who beat them. They're sending a lot of different information that we were doing on our own. So they're doing it for us, which is great. And they're highlighting a lot of the key areas where they know that we're looking for. And then beyond that, you know, it's really great to see the passion from these potential student athletes coming into our program of why they want to be part of our program. And, you know, they outline it, you know, in an email. And then when we do have those phone conversations and meetings, when we're allowed to, you know, according to the NCAA, It's just really great to listen to them. But at the same time, you know, we're trying to see, well, are they trying to sell themselves to get in? And then are they trying to sell themselves because they really want to be in and really want to be in for the full time while they're here, you know, in college?
And you mentioned that you went to Stern School of Business, and you also mentioned that you wanted to make it on Wall Street. So prior to coming to Columbia University, you were actually doing some volunteer positions in fencing. Can you tell us a little bit about those volunteer positions?
Sure. So when I was fencing after college, I represented the New York Athletic Club based in New York. And the New York Athletic Club has one of the strongest fencing programs in the country. And it just throughout history, I mean, fencing was even started in America, and the first United States Fencing Association was started in the New York Athletic Club. So the history that they have with fencing is just tremendous. And so I fenced for them. And then about 8 years ago in 2007, they asked me to become chairman of the fencing program. And it was a great opportunity. It's a non-paid program, you know, like you said, it's a volunteer position. And basically, it's running that program, everything from recruiting to helping run practices to managing the budget that we have and just so many different things. One of the goals while I was there was to win a medal for women's épée. That's one of the three weapons. And we recruited some of the most talented women épée fencers, and we had about 3 or 4 years of different camps that we had for them. And during these camps, we were doing these different deliberate focus practice exercises. And one that even the Columbia team makes fun of me for is our 1 minute, one touch drill. And in fencing, a lot of times it comes down to that last point. Like in basketball, it comes down to the last shot. Football, maybe, you know, someone needs that last field goal or last pass into the end zone. In fencing, the score would be 4-4 or 14-14 and the last point wins. And so we did a lot of these different drills, and it was really exciting in the 2012 Olympics when one of our women on the bronze medal team, Courtney Hurley, the score was 30-30 against Russia, and she got the last touch. You know, so it's like everything that we were doing, you know, that was the bronze medal, was really great. So through that program, really working with elite athletes, you know, helping them achieve the best possible scenarios and training scenarios to help them achieve their goals. It was, you know, it's a lot of fun. I'm still doing that right now. So even in 2012 Olympics, I had the opportunity to go with the Modern Pentathlon team. And so Modern Pentathlon is fencing, swimming, horse jumping, running, and shooting. And so I got to go to the 2012 Olympics as one of the fencing coach representatives, because we were helping that program out with fencing. And one of our athletes was so close, she got fourth. But the beauty was, you know, all around she was great, but she had the best fence that she had also. So, you know, that was really exciting for me and the New York Athletic Club. And, you know, that's where I spend a lot of my volunteer time. My wife always jokes around, and she says that, you know, Mike, I don't understand, you know, why are you putting in 30, 40 hours? This was before Columbia, into this. And it was because it was my passion. You know, now I tricked her, because now actually Columbia pays me for what I do. And so, you know, when I put in the time, it's like, well, honey, you know, that's because, you know, this is my job. So, but New York Athletic Club, great program. And I'm really, you know, honored to be involved in that program.
Yeah. And I'm extremely honored to highlight that program, seeing how I'm a native New Yorker, and New York City has become a hotbed, as you mentioned, throughout the years for fencers. So it's great to finally be able to give back and try to get this out more to people throughout the United States that may not be aware of it. Mm-hmm. So as a strength and conditioning coach, even though I mainly deal with soccer, I always like to try to emphasize the importance of strength and conditioning. So one of the questions that I had for you is, based on your experience, you know, how important of a role does strength and conditioning play within fencing?
Sure. Strength and conditioning is huge with regards to our sport. And if you've never seen our sport, there's a lot of different misconceptions on, you know, how athletic or how flexible that, you know, you need to be a fencer. But if you do see it, people will realize that probably the ideal fencer would be someone like a LeBron James or Kobe Bryant, you know, someone with a lot of power and speed, quick speed, strength, you know, someone that, you know, like a basketball player jumping. I look at like volleyball players as the great, like, athletic body. of a fencer. And, you know, I've given the relationship of a fencer is, you know, someone that had like the flexibility of an Olympic gymnast. You know, that's like the ideal fencer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the strength and power of maybe an Olympic boxer, you know, but yet the mindset of like a master chess player. and you know, with strength and conditioning, we take it very serious. You know, we do a lot of probably similar things for general strength and conditioning in the off season. And in regular season, we're really focusing on agility and speed. You know, whether one of our fencers can run a mile very fast won't be as important as them being able to have the blast off in like a 10-yard sprint. So there's a lot of different qualities with regards to our strength and conditioning than other sports, as I'm sure it is all around.
Yeah, so what I'm getting for that is sport specificity. So it's important to understand the demands of the sport in order to be able to train for it. I know with strength and conditioning, sometimes you get a person who has a background working with only certain sports, especially in the collegiate setting, they're handling various different teams. How have you found that process to be? I mean, do you bring someone in from the outside or do you work with the strength and conditioning staff at Columbia?
Mm-hmm. So we do a little bit of both. And so now in my 4 years, I feel we have a great mix of that combination. So there's some, you know, just like you said, very educated, amazing individuals in our strength and conditioning department at Columbia. And we do have some of our athletes utilize those resources when they do need general strength and conditioning for sure. Some of our athletes actually even have some of their own private strength and conditioning trainers that they've been using in high school. And so, you know, we don't touch that. That's working. That's great. They do that on their own. But then we also, last year, we hired a group. They call themselves Verb Fitness. And two individuals, actually, Aaron DeGraff and Ahmed Ilya. And Ahmed actually was a fencer. And back in 2000, he was on the junior world team, actually a very strong fencer, top 16 in the world as an under 20 fencer. And he went into the practice of strength and conditioning training, and he's a personal trainer. And a lot of his clients have been fencers. So over the years, he's gained the experience not only from his own fencing what he needed, but have been training, you know, members of our world team and here in the city. So, you know, they came in as a trial for us. We love them. And, you know, so they really know what it takes for a fencer and what fencers need with regards to, you know, speed and agility specifically. And we call them our fencing fitness advisors. Yeah,
that's actually quite funny. Mm-hmm. And it's great that you've been able to bring someone in with that type of expertise and that's been a fencer in the past and knows what it takes to be one in order to do kind of your fitness assessments and your strength and conditioning programs, which actually brings me to my next question. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how specifically involved you are with this, but what type, let's say you just got a brand new freshman, mm-hmm. what type of assessment process or testing process do you do to figure out where this person's at?
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. And we've been experimenting with a lot of different assessments with regards to this. So over the years, we have tested in different areas with our different fencers. So as of now, as of this year, we didn't do any testing. And we're just trying something different. It's like, okay, let's not do any testing and let's just test where we are mid-season. And let's test where we are at the end of the season. And it's more of a mental thing because when we started testing the beginning of the season, people were focusing more on how much better. So, for example, one of our tests is a broad jump. You know, so in fencing, you know, the jumping, the strength, the blasting motion is very good. And so when they're testing, they're doing this broad jump. And then we don't want them focusing so much on, well, how much further can I jump? I mean, that's a good thing, but rather just enjoy the workout. Put the hardest, you know, put all your excitement and everything into the workout. It's not about jumping. It's about the fencing, you know, but we're going to be doing things to help you become better. So that's where we're just going to maybe just randomly one day, boom, we're going to just do some testing. And when they ask what to do, oh, we're just doing the testing. And then at the end, we're going to do it also and just kind of see where they are and use our testing less specific like they do in some other sports, where I know in football, I'm not sure about soccer, but other sports where, you know, it's really about, well, how far can this person jump and how far can this person, or how fast can this person sprint? Because there is no combined in fencing. You know, once people graduate, it's not going to be the difference of them recruiting or not. And I rather have them more just do what they can and not measure them so specifically on these things, although we will, just to see some improvement. So it's a little bit, you know, it's very different, you know, because you think you can statistically kind of look at that. And well, we're going more just, okay, well, do what you can, do the best that you can, and then we'll still be measuring it to see about the progress.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting way to think about it, because most sports, as you mentioned, testing, we're looking, are they getting better at the specific tests, mm-hmm. you know, from year to year? Have they gotten stronger? Have they gotten more powerful? Have they increased their acceleration? And here, as you mentioned, for a fencer, you know, does it really matter how long their broad jump is going to be? Probably not. But at the same time, it gives you some sort of baseline. And I'm sure, being a person who's into statistics, you want to have at least a baseline so you have some normative data.
Exactly. And so that's why we do the testing. And we have even brought in the national team before at the New York Athletic Club and tested them, kind of like, okay, so here's the world team. This is where they're at. Where do you measure up to it? If people kind of want to know. But then, you know, with fencing being such a mental game as well, is the person jumping 6 inches further could technically be a worse performer on the strip than the person that has a more sound mind jumping 6 inches less.
Yeah. And since we're on the topic of mindset, when you get individuals who have just joined the program, how do you work with them, especially now that they're in a college setting? I'm sure it can be very nerve-wracking. What are specific things that you may tell them, or perhaps you have them attend maybe specific seminars or read certain books and have them believe in themselves?
So the one thing that we really foster, and I'm sure most teams do this within our program, is the sense of community, the sense of transparency, the sense of, you know, that everyone on the team is someone that you can go to. And even myself, you know, I have a policy that, you know, everyone has my phone number, and I say, you can call me anytime. You can text me anytime. There's no bad time. And I say, you know, if I'm sleeping and I don't answer it, I'll call you in the morning. But, you know, of course, there's like a little chain of command with our team captains and different things like that. But, you know, coming to college is definitely a huge change for people. And we always have, like, actually this week, I had 39 on my 15-minute meetings where I sit down with them, kind of do a check-in. It's been 6 weeks. How are you doing in school? You know, coach, everything's great. I'm like, you're having no problems. Well, you know, I might need a tutor in chemistry. Well, why don't we just get you a tutor in chemistry? You know, wow, I'm really struggling in this class. Or, you know, I got my very first B+. And, you know, but so just to kind of calm them down in that sense. And then, you know, how are you doing in fencing? And, you know, maybe with regards to practices, we kind of help them out. And then where I get a lot of feedback is, who on your team are you concerned about academically, fencing, or health-wise? And that's where you might hear, oh, well, this person, I know they're not sleeping that much or different things. And well, they're not telling on their team members, but they're really, well, they're trying to get them help. So we have a lot of check-ins like that. I feel that, you know, the upperclassmen are huge leaders, you know, with regards to the first years, especially on how to get around and do things and request things. You know, you mentioned like, you know, book or seminar to go to. It's funny. We actually, over the summer, so the NCAA doesn't allow us as fencing, under different sports or different rules, but we can't give them any assignments. But we do have a beginning of the year assignment, which we let them know during the summer if they want to do, they can. And we had them watch, you know, four different movies on what it means to be a team. And you know, one of those movies was Miracle on Ice. You know, another one was Hoosiers, you know, all these great team movies. Million Dollar Baby, you know, it's a great, great movie about a woman boxer, not the best thing, but like all these different movies that they all wrote, you know, what they got out of it, you know, and that really helped kind of build a community. And There's a lot of resources at all universities, from health services to, you know, sports psychology to nutrition. And we just make sure they know about all these services and very proactively give them that type of thing.
Yeah. And I think that's extremely important. And sometimes some things that are missed when you're dealing with student athletes is the fact that they're students first and then that they're athletes right. second. Many people should be reminded of that. And I think sometimes we put too much emphasis on the athletics and not on the fact that they're actually also getting a quality education.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's a funny story. My very first semester when I was coaching here, I remember coming into practice one morning, and normally people are pretty upbeat because we like to have our practices. You know, that's our exciting time. That's the fun time. Yeah, you know, we're working hard, but it's a fun time. And it was like, it was really quiet and I didn't know what happened. And I asked, you know, one of our captains, like, you know, what, did someone die? Like, I mean, like I was really nervous and said, no coach, it's midterms. And I was like, oh, because I don't think anyone like slept that night, but, you know, out of respect, they're all there ready to go. So we did like a light workout. And then I just, you know, no pride, you know, here we go, guys, you know, we have the next 2 days off. But you know, we really try to help them become responsible, to manage their time, to be able to manage their study time and do things like that. But if they do miss a practice, what they do is they send me the midterm that they missed a practice for. They send me the paper that they missed a practice for. This way they're accountable for their work. And at the same time, for me, I joke with them a little bit. You know, I'm starting to get my Ivy League education now by reading some of their papers and seeing some of their tests. They're learning some really amazing things. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's what a student athlete is, you know, balancing academics and balancing, you know, their love, their sport. And, you know, last year of 42 members on our team, 20 made the dean's list, you know, 3.6 or above. So they're champions, you know, on and off the strip.
That's great to hear. I mean, I'm super happy to hear that. One of the things that, and I just wanted to see if you use this, one of the things that we use in soccer, colleges, professional level, is wellness questionnaires. So after every single day, we send them, and there's a couple of free apps. And basically, it talks about their sleep quality, their nutrition, soreness. Do you do anything similar to that, or is it just talking to the fencers themselves?
So, you know, that's a great idea. We do it probably a little bit looser. And probably a little bit less in the everyday, right? And we have had some times where, you know, they fill out a survey, sometimes anonymously, sometimes with their name, about almost where they rank themselves in some areas and how they're feeling as well. But I'd say right now it's more talking than it is with regards to actual surveys, where I can see where the surveys can bring out some great things that they might be a little afraid to talk about. Yeah. Good idea. Talking, I mean, a lot of times, you know, the team, I'm always saying no injuries. So I'm all about them even goofing around doing some things, but then I'm, you know, like, don't go ice skating, you know, during the season, right? Don't go to the park in Central Park, go ice skating, because you don't want an accident to happen. You know, or don't play basketball, though it's a great, you know, supplemental sport, because you can jam your finger. And if you don't have your finger in fencing, you're not gonna be able to hold a weapon. You know, there's different things like that. And then sometimes I say, well, how are you? Coach, I'm fine. Well, I mean, how's your back? It's been hurting. Well, I mean, it's a little sore. So, you know, are you gonna be, you know, what then? Because we have a goal sheet at the beginning of the year, like, what are your goals? And if their goal is to make the Olympics and they have to be at that tournament the next day, then all right, we allow it. Unless it's going to cause them not to walk. But their goal is to be NCAA champion. The NCAA championships is in March, and there's a tournament in October. Sometimes, even though they want to compete or want to practice, that's where I hold them back. And they hate me for it, but they understand it. You know, because everyone wants to be out there. And so that's where maybe the talking communication has helped us out a lot.
Yeah, and I know that feeling. Many athletes, and I'm definitely sure at Columbia, have very type A personalities, and they constantly want to be on the go. They constantly want to be playing their sport. So sometimes it's very tough to rein them in.
Exactly. Cause they're always okay. No, I can do more, coach, you know, put me in. Right.
Yeah. So since we talked about the topic right now, and you're talking about some of the ways that you go about preventing injuries, fencing is a sport that requires a lot of mobility, a lot of flexibility. What are some exercises or movement patterns that you use to make sure that you're preventing soft tissue injuries?
Mm-hmm. So, the one thing that we really focus on is the correct warm up and the correct cool down. And, you know, probably for different sports, different things, especially our cool down. We do even just walking for 5 minutes to cool down before we stretch. We find is something very important because the heart rate's up, everything's up. So the warm up and the cool down are very important in our exercises. Because when we're practicing fencing, it's a lot of start, stop, start, stop. And so what we find is different people have different muscle groups that they need to stretch more. And so I know a lot of teams, they warm up and they stretch together, which we do a general stretch, but then we also allow them to have their own time to, whether it's rolling out something special or, you know, stretch themselves, because everybody has their own thing as well. When it comes to the different exercises, we do a lot of lateral type movements to focus on, you know, everything from the groin area to the outside of the thighs, to ladder type of drills for agility, quick movement with the feet and different things like that, to short sprints, as I was mentioning before. Is that answering your question?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Yeah,
And so, you know, I've had like our basketball coaches come watch our training. We've had some other people watch our training. And, you know, I'd say it's a little combination between almost like a basketball, a volleyball, and even maybe when it comes to that ladder, a little soccer, agility training. The difference is, you know, we don't have to have the ball and dribble that ball and worry about that. We just want the quick feet. So when we are moving up and down the strip, that the balance is always in control, because balance is very important in fencing.
Part of the reason that I created the Historic Performance Podcast is also to give back to younger people who are strength and conditioning coaches or sports scientists, or even just interested in getting into one of these sports. And I know that you mentioned kind of your volunteer positions and how you ended up getting to Columbia, but for someone who wants to get into the coaching side of fencing, what would be some recommendations that you would have for them?
Well, you know, what I would say is, if it's your passion and you love it, it's a great fit. And even for myself, I was a good épée fencer. And in fencing, there's three different weapons. And even though I didn't know the other two weapons, I was always willing to learn. And so even the past 4 years, while I've been coach at Columbia, I've been taking coaches' lessons from one of the best coaches I feel in the country, Dr. Aldar Kogler. So, you know, one of the things for a young coach, which I found helpful in my career, is always be willing to learn. And even now, look, Columbia Fencing, we won the NCAA championship this past year. So we're on the top of our game. But I never know everything. And I think it's very important. I'm reading books. I'm looking at different articles that come online and just always trying to learn things. So I think that's very important. And then, you know, everyone needs to survive. Everyone needs to get paid. You know, food doesn't come free. And so, for me, I was working in the industry of software sales, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the companies I worked with, and it was a very great experience being in the business world. But the passion was always in fencing. So even though it was for free, you know, it was my hobby. Some people play video games. Some people do, that was my joy, and I got joy out of it. And by working for no pay, ended up getting me to a position where I actually do get paid for what I do. And so volunteer opportunities, which I put myself in a great organization like the New York Athletic Club, you know, or put yourself under great head coaches someplace else, or put yourself with other great strength and conditioning coaches that have proven themselves, I think it's a great way to, get yourself that opportunity. Because in fencing, Columbia, the coach before me was here for 32 years. So this door does not open up too often. And, I'm entering my fifth season. We'll see how long I last here. And, you know, I hope to be here for 32 years, but we'll see. And but so it's like always about putting yourself in the right place. And you know, it's once again, you know, it's easier said than to do and say money doesn't matter, but the money will come for sure.
Yeah. And that's something that I think just doesn't apply to fencing, but applies to everything. If Absolutely. You're passionate about it, go after it. Every single person that I've talked to on this podcast has had some sort of mentor. So don't be afraid. If there's someone that you idolize, shoot them an email. The worst thing that can happen, they don't reply or they say, no, I don't have time for this. But generally speaking, I think most people are fairly open.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always say, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. You know, it's like, just like you said, reach out there. And sometimes I even found, you know, if someone didn't have time for me, just to observe one of their practices, one of their workouts, or go listen to them speak. And then even like the superstars, I mean, I'm reading books about football coaches, basketball coaches. I mean, what I've learned from John Wooden and, you know, Chip Kelly and, you know, some of these, you know, basketball coaches, football coaches out there. You know, there's some great writers out there in books that you can learn some things. And I take little things here and there. So even if you can't meet them, there might be a book with some history and you'll learn something from it.
Definitely. So Michael, if there's anyone who has any questions or comments regarding this podcast, what's a good way of contacting you? Do you have a Twitter page, via email? What would it be?
Yeah. So, I am on Twitter. It's M Aufrich, M-A-U-F-R-I-C-H is my Twitter handle. Is that what you say?
Yep.
Handle, account. Yep. And then for an email, an easy way is M-A for Michael Aufrich Tigg, and then 3110@columbia.edu would be the best way to contact me through email.
Perfect. And I'll make sure to put that in the link below when I publish the podcast, that way people can have easy access to it rather than trying to quickly scribble it down right now.
There you go.
Michael, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me. And for everyone else out there that have been listening, hopefully you got one takeaway from what I said. And feel free to shoot me an email about any question you might have, and I promise to get back to you within 48 hours or 72 hours. And if not, feel free to email me again.
As always, thanks for tuning in today. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps others discover the show. If you have any recommendations in terms of future guests for the show, please reach out to me via Twitter @historicperform. Or you can also email me, historicperformance@gmail.com. Those are the best two ways to get in contact. I'll see you guys next time.